You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sidery, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, as well, Brennan Clean. We both reference Bright Side of the Sun. You can follow Brennan on Twitter at BrennanClean14. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. We're actually joining you after the Suns won their first game of the month in February. We're now March 1st, and they won on the last day of February by a score of 110-102, I believe. Let me pull up a score actually in front of me right now.
Yeah, 110-102. You're right.
All right, awesome. Yeah, right here, I'm looking at the stats right now. Booker recorded his 19th outing of scoring 30-plus or more last night as he tallied up 34-6-1-3. And then Josh Jackson had his best game by far as a Phoenix Sun in his career so far, 29 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, on 9 of 16 field goals. And also, your guy, Shaquille Harrison, has really making a name for himself for the last 5 days or so. I think he has about 3 days left and about one game left on his 10-day contract. But I imagine at this point, I really want to see him the rest of the season. So I guess from the takeaways from last night's game, my main takeaway was Booker and Jackson finally having two great games at the same time and leading the Suns to a win, albeit over one of the worst teams in the NBA, the Memphis Grizzlies. So it's kind of expected. But what was your thoughts on last night's game, Brun?
I mean, honestly, it's just nice to get a win in February. Like, to lose every game in a whole month, even if it's the shortest month of the year, pretty bad, pretty embarrassing. So just for like aesthetic purposes, I guess, to say we won at least one game in the month is nice. Kind of made me think of listening to John Gambadoro last night. They were talking about the draft and how, you know, do they want the team to even win this game? And I think I was on the side of wanting, and especially if it looks as good as it did last night. But it is pretty bad if you have two teams in a professional league who haven't won a game in the entire month going up against each other. But it was actually a pretty entertaining game. What did you think?
For sure, yeah. I think the rest of the way, we've always seen the first three games so with Memphis. I think this is the fourth time. But overall, every single game's been close so far. I think it's kind of intuitive of how bad both teams are. But I think Gasol, I think one thing really interesting was Gasol didn't have that big of a game. I thought he was really in line to. And kind of the underrated aspect of the second half, how the Suns kind of pulled away at the end with Shaquille Harrison's defense, but also Josh Jackson once again playing center for the entire fourth quarter of Marcus Gasol. So what was your thoughts on that? Because now we've seen Jackson body up against Anthony Davis in New Orleans, now against Marcus Gasol. So are they kind of realizing now that maybe Josh Jackson, even though it's kind of pretty embarrassing, that he might be their best overall post defender?
Yeah, I think that's the thing is, like, he's just their best defender in general. And I think it's a bad sign for most of the other players on this team if a guy who's 6'8 is better at defending bigs than anyone else. I mean, I thought Dragan did a decent job against Gasol, actually. I think he contributed to some of the bad night Gasol had. He's one of the only guys in the league, I just put it this during the game, like, very few players in the whole league can actually contest Marc Gasol's shot because he has so much length, and him and his brother both have like the longest arms of any 7-footers in the league, it seems like. And he's Bender is similar, so he was able to do that too. But yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I think it's really just impressive that Jackson's able to handle that matchup.
Yeah, I guess to bring this more into a generalized point with Jackson is we've touched on a lot over the last 6 weeks on this podcast, but I think it's kind of warranted with how he's been playing, just how strong like the turnaround's been. It's almost a 180 compared to how he was in December, and now in February at points looks like the best player on the floor for the Suns. So I guess just what's your thoughts on this transformation for Jax, because it seems like he hit the rookie wall in the very beginning of the season, now it's all of a sudden flipped around in just a weird sort of way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does. To me, it kind of just goes to show how I feel like we can sometimes get caught up in that language, the rhetoric of like, oh, well, you know, once they learn the game, I think it's something that we're seeing with a lot of these draft prospects from, you know, Marvin Bagley to DeAndre Ayton. And it was something that was said quite a bit about Jackson, where it's like, you know, they get in the right system and they'll learn how to play the right way. We say that kind of stuff all the time, but it doesn't always work out that way. I think you're seeing for Jackson that it is to a pretty, you know, remarkable degree. Like, he's learning quickly, he's getting better pretty just impressively, just, you know, building on game after game, adding things to his game and doing exactly the things he needs to do. I think that's what's been impressive too, is, you know, he's not just getting better in small aspects, like his entire feel for the game looks pretty different.
Definitely, yeah. I was looking at Basketball Reference, where I always go for my stat mining data, and I noticed that with Josh Jackson, his last two games have been his career highs as far as free throw attempts in a game. Last night he had 14, the other night he had 12 in New Orleans. So Ding is kind of figuring out with how fast he is and how he's able to change speeds at 6'8 forward, and he has a really good handle for a guy at 6'8 as well. Ding is kind of realizing that if I just attack the basket every time, that I'm going to get a lot of trips to the line out of it.
I think that, yeah, you can definitely see that. I think that's been an underestimated or I guess just underrated part of what Peyton has been able to do this team too. You know, they have always, literally always been known for what they're able to do in fast break situations. Obviously 7 seconds or less, that's sort of the trademark of this team. And you know, while they've been tanking the past couple of years, we haven't really had the opportunity to see how fun that can be. But since Alfred Payton's come in and Josh Jackson's taken a step forward, I think you've been able to see what that can look like when this team, how versatile it is able to get out and run. They can do some fun stuff, and Jackson's just making the most of the fact that really no one can match his athleticism on the court in most matchups.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, Brian. I think just even though me and Jackson are both 21, I felt like I had like a proud father moment last night. Just I've been pumping up for the last 6 months, and it finally seems like it's paying off. So appreciate you doing that for me, Josh. But overall, just what's your thoughts on, we'll bounce over to another guy here in Shaquille Harrison, and he's a guy that's really impressing me so far. He's had only 4 games with the Suns, and he's had 2 games already with 4 steals or more, and he's played less than 10 minutes every single game. So I tweeted out last night on my account that he is one of the more underrated guys defensively already on this team, and he brings an overall needed defensive mentality. I feel like it kind of shifts when he goes into the lineup. Don't you see that as well?
I do, and I think Scott Bordeaux has been pretty excited about him while tweeting about him every single night. But it's obvious, you know what I mean? Like you're saying, he steps on the court, and I mean, I'm already to the point with him where when he's on the court, I get kind of excited because I feel like there's going to be a change in the defense. And, you know, especially you do kind of start to see the makings of a potentially good defensive unit when if Harrison, Bender, and Jackson are all on the court together, yeah, which we saw quite a bit, even in the beginning of the fourth quarter last night. The versatility those guys have to be able to switch. And the Suns were, I mean, like you said, with Jackson on Gasol, one of the things that they were doing in the game last night when the Grizzlies did get out in transition or push the tempo a little bit, they were just matching up on whoever was closest and had a similar height. Like, they weren't really focused so much on matchups a lot of the game, and they were switching when in half court situations quite a bit. And I think that Harrison's a guy who can help you do that, and you know, obviously Jackson is too.
I mean, it kind of gives you a sneak peek into the future, right? Just how we touched on the last episode, but how McDonough, it seems like he's building this roster out. You can just switch everything and it'll benefit itself.
Yeah, and it makes you kind of, you know, if Harrison's able to have success, if, you know, Peyton fits a little bit better defensively than the shorter guys that they were playing, then, you know, it does give you a little bit of insight as to maybe what type of player you would want to target to build the roster next to Booker. Even, you know, maybe it is Peyton, maybe it is Harrison, maybe those two guys do stick around, but the success that they've had looking a lot better defensively than the other options earlier in the year, I think that gives you some security that you kind of feel like, well, you know, there is hope for the backcourt. Like, it's not just going to be a horrible situation forever, and Booker can work defensively next to bigger players.
Yeah, I imagine we'll know the answer to this by Saturday or Sunday, since the Suns do play and the Thunder on Saturday, and Harrison's last day, I believe, is on Saturday night. So if he does stick around for the rest of the season, they'll have to sign to a new deal by, I imagine, Sunday. So a thing that I've noticed as well is Tyre Ulis is not completely out of the rotation. It shouldn't be a surprise that his play this season has been really bad. So just what's your thoughts on them simply, looks like, moving on from Tyre Ulis at this point? And at this point, I think he's had so many opportunities, it shouldn't be an excuse as far as Alan Williams being out, just as far as why he's not doing what he's doing. And I think that's kind of bothering him to a point. I think it's kind of taking a toll on everyone else when he can't shoot the ball when he's wide open. And like I mentioned a lot on this podcast, he's unplayable when he can't shoot the ball. And now at this point, it seems like everyone's really figuring out how to guard Ulis, and that is really grim for his NBA future, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more DNPs he gets when a, you know, 10-day G Leaguer is ahead of him in the rotation, yeah, the worse it looks. But, you know, at the same time, like, some teams those backup point guards, like second and third string point guards in the NBA, move around constantly, even within the season, like we've seen for the Suns this year. So, I mean, some team will take a chance on him next year. You know, he could even stick around here and just be a depth guy, but yeah, it's definitely not as exciting. I mean, there were people who I remember with the draft last year who were saying, like, you know, or the year before, I guess, when he got taken, was like, this guy's a first rounder. Yeah. You guys are underestimating him. He's going to contribute on defense, even though he's so small. He's an elite playmaker, et cetera. And that hasn't looked like that's true, really, even last year, but especially this year.
Definitely. I actually had John Calipari on just as a random guest in the summer, and he talked about Tyler Ulis. And I guess to that point, he's a very good college player, and he's really hasn't translated to the pros after that really strong start. When he first got out of the lineup in March, no one knew how to guard him, and now it seems like that's the case. So that's unfortunate for Ulis, but as you mentioned, those second, third string point guards usually do bounce around the league, and he's a guy that's a really good candidate as far as declining his non-guaranteed option this summer, so that makes a lot of sense from the Suns' perspective. But moving on here to Elfrid Payton, he had another solid game. So what's your thoughts on Elfrid Payton? I guess generalizing that to the point of how Booker and Payton continue to look good together, and like you mentioned as well, he's also advancing Josh Jackson to the point where I'm actually liking the overall fit between those three.
Yeah, I think so too. I just think that especially when Bender was playing center, the team really just looked, I don't know, and, you know, it's hard because, like you said, to start the show, like, the Grizzlies are one of the only teams in the league who have as little talent as the Suns do right now, so they're going to look better, and that's hard to kind of analyze. I think there were things to build from, especially like I was saying with Bender center when Jackson was playing, you know, kind of the four, I guess. It did start to look like a unit that could work going forward, and you know, it's hard to say when they do play. You know, they're going to play the Thunder next, and they might just get the crap knocked out of them. But it looks good, you know what I mean? And let's hope that can kind of move forward. And it, you know, like I said before, when we were previewing the game, if Booker can continue to score like this, they're going to be in every game.
Definitely, I think with Booker, he like I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, he had another 30-point game. His 19th of the season. He had 34.6 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 steals, which is a career high for Booker. So what was your thoughts on his performance last night? We haven't touched on it yet, but he once again proved to the point where he's one of the overall better young players in this entire league.
Yeah, he really struggled finishing at the rim for most of the game. Kellen Olsen tweeted, like, at some point Booker's just going to start shooting it 20 to 30 times a game because he's tired of seeing what these other guys try to do.
We're totally there already.
And especially with TJ Warren out. Yeah, we're there, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think the last few games I've looked at his numbers, he shot 24, 25, 26, 28, 28. So, yeah, we're definitely there.
Yeah, and he's going to – I think he's going to continue to do that because he's shown one thing that he has definitely shown this year is, like I said, he was really not doing well finishing at the rim yesterday, even when he was open. Marcus Gasol's an imposing guy to go up against, but he was getting to the rim, getting open layups, and just the rim was not his friend. And at the end of the game, it didn't matter. He was still able to knock down those pull-up mid-rangers that he's gotten so efficient at and kind of close the game for the team. And he should continue to do that because obviously, you know, even when Jackson has a night like he had last night, Booker's far and away the best option on the team. And is their best chance to compete against NBA level guys. He's really the only elite type scorer they have. I mean, we know that, but he continues to show it when he's able to do what he did last night.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like to the point that you're mentioning there, if the Suns do want to win a lot of games moving forward, which I don't think they will, obviously, the Grizzlies are probably the worst team to play the rest of the way, but do you think if they want to have a chance over most of these regular top of the competition as far as Western Conference goes, I think Booker's going to have to keep putting up these numbers because I imagine he will have to, alongside really a strong performance from Jackson as well.
I do. I think, you know, and one of the things that we've been watching is his three-point shooting, and only 1 of 6 last night. I think it just wasn't falling, and they were playing him pretty aggressively out on the perimeter, and he just started driving because their defense was not working, the Grizzlies, and so you know, obviously, it's not just shoot threes just because, but yeah. I think that's going to have to be another part of his game that that goes. That way he doesn't have to take 29 shots to get to 34 points, you know?
Exactly, yeah. I mentioned it before with Harden and Curry. I think Booker's number three right now as far as three-point attempts after the All-Star break. So if he can maintain that over the last 20 or so games, it's definitely an encouraging sign for his development moving forward. But a really interesting on-off stat I brought from Chris Hansen, I just pulled up a little bit ago, and it's looking at the two-man lineup between Booker and Jackson and Booker and Warren over the last calendar month, and it's very interesting to me. Devin Booker and TJ Warren, that two-man lineup has played 225 minutes. They have 106.7 offensive rating, 115.6 defensive rating, and they have a minus 8.8 net rating. And then compared to Devin Booker and Josh Jackson, who played 183 minutes together, they have a 104.2 offensive rating, 103.4 defensive rating for a plus 0.8 net rating. So I guess to say that when Booker and Warren are out there, the Suns are 8 points worse compared to when Booker and Jackson are out there. So is that kind of indicative to where the starting lineup should be heading?
I hope so. I mean, it's funny that Chris tweeted that. I didn't see it, but I was actually thinking something relatively similar, maybe not, you know, the number part of it, but just obviously you and I both try to be as educated as possible about this team and look at the numbers, look at the, you know, watch the games, talk to the people and get a good picture. But like the more that this season goes along, I have no idea what to do with TJ Warren. Like, he's probably one of the more confusing players in the entire league to me, because I feel like for the most part, his success has little to do with the Suns' success of the team. He doesn't fit like a lot of the lineups and schemes that they try to pull off, but he's a really effective player when he's on the court. Like, and then they're able to do something like this when he's not out there and win their first game in the month. And it's just, I really have no idea.
I mean, that's kind of, I guess Jackson brings a lot more defensively than Warren does. And I've noticed this a lot with Warren, especially over the last 6 weeks or so compared to Jackson. It's the playmaking ability, and Jackson's miles ahead of Warren. And I noticed a lot in the last few games as well. Warren missed some wide-open guys that could have taken the lead for them down in New Orleans. So maybe his tunnel vision is getting the best of him. And overall, like I mentioned a lot to you when we were at the games, TJ always has these really quiet 20 to 25-point games, but I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. So I guess I don't know where to read on that yet. But I agree with you on a lot of what you said, Brent, because I feel like TJ might be a guy where he's either the sixth man. If he doesn't accept that, then I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that is one thing we really haven't seen from him since really early in his career. So I'm hoping, you know, that I really want it to happen this season. I think that that's an important thing to see. You know, I don't feel like it'll be a problem with him mentally to accept that role. I've never gotten the impression he's like that big alpha dog. But at the same time, he was the guy at NC State, and he's been able to be the guy the past two seasons here. Whenever he wants to score, he's allowed to. And so it might be a problem, but I think we should see it. I hope that, you know, especially with how well Jackson's performed and how well Bender has played, even that those two guys have earned a spot, and then Warren should get a chance to, he's going to have a similar role when he's on the court, and I think it shouldn't be too big of a problem. And then, you know, kind of see how that looks and if it helps him, if it helps the team to have that scoring off the second unit, because they really don't have that at all. I mean, the bench scored 15 of their 110 points last night, and that's, you know, injuries are in there too, but that's been kind of the pattern all year.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because Chris actually tweeted another thing about the lineups, and I'll throw this out to you because it mentions Dragan Bender, and the three-man lineup of Booker, Jackson, and Bender over the last month has a plus 6.5 net rating, and compared to that with TJ Warren, Bender, and Booker, that's minus 12.4. So it's kind of, like we're mentioning on this podcast, the numbers are kind of backing up to the point where I think TJ is slowly but surely going to have to get into his six-man role. And I think we don't touch on a lot on this podcast since TJ isn't officially on the six-man role yet, but how good of a six-man could TJ Warren be long-term? Because I feel like that's where he could optimize the most value out of him. And for $11 million a year to be a top-flight, top-five six-man in the league, I'm definitely down for that.
I think so, and I think you're able, one thing that would help him there, and depending on what the Suns do with their roster, but potentially with him in the second unit, it's easier to surround him with the types of players that he needs. You know, ideally he'd be in a really, really spaced out lineup and be able to work on the interior. That's what he does best. And you're able to, a guy like Troy Daniels, who is really just a shooter at the point, that works a lot easier off of the second unit. To be able to play him against worse players, like, you can survive without Daniels' defense and passing that you'd hope for and that's going to work better with Warren. You know what I mean? Like, Mirza Teletovic was a guy on the Suns who would probably help TJ Warren. Those types of players are always going to be off of the bench because they're so limited, but in a way I think that could help TJ because just having their shooting on the court would benefit him, and he's able to prop them up in other ways where he's going to be able to provide the points. And, you know, defense maybe isn't so important. You don't have to have elite defensive players, so Warren would be able to survive there if he's defending backups. I just think, you know, his skills kind of work best with the types of matchups he'd be facing in a second unit compared to a starting unit. And then obviously we've already talked how much it would help the starters to have a little more versatility in that starting lineup.
I totally agree with you there as well, Brandon. I guess rewinding a little bit, like 6 months back, more than that, about 9 months to last June, and when they first selected Josh Jackson, it's impossible getting around McDonough's head and think about the scenario here, but do you think when he drafted Jackson, how do you think he was imagining how Jackson and Warren were going to look together? Do you think he was thinking about starting TJ at the four alongside him, or do you think he's always had the thought about TJ as the optimal sixth man moving forward?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to project. I thought that they were going to that the hope was that they could start together, but I think we saw immediately Jackson wasn't ready to defend fours. Warren, his best defensive situation, I don't necessarily have a read on yet. I think obviously he's a little bit slower than a lot of wings, but hasn't always had success defending fours. So again, I think that just points to him needing to defend worse players on the pitch, but it's just puzzling with the whole situation because obviously McDonough signed Warren to that big extension before the season and has been talking pretty glowingly about him all year. Maybe that's just to give him the confidence that, you know, has been kind of a problem for him. Getting going and being consistent as a scorer has been a big problem before this year. So maybe it was just a mental thing to try to get him in the right mindset, you know, lock him into a contract, talk him up, make him feel confident, make him feel like, you know, he's really the second guy on this team going into the year. And it has helped. I don't know what that says about his role per se, but I think it kind of has, you know, it obviously accumulated to his best season so far. And I guess that's good. But now the future is a little bit questionable, even though he has performed so well.
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting things to follow this summer from a Suns perspective is the future of TJ Warren, whether it's in a trade or if he stays long-term as a sixth man or as a starter at the four. I think that's he has many different avenues he could be taken down as far as his career at Phoenix goes. But moving on here to a point that I got a question from a fan last night on Twitter, and he mentioned the possibility of Alan Williams coming back soon, which seems like it's going to be very soon. I imagine about a week or two with how he's shooting around. He's doing a lot of work at Talking Stick last week as far as working out before the game. So when Alan Williams returns, who's going to be left out of the rotation? Is it going to be Jared Dudley? Is Tyson Chandler going to keep sitting? Are those two veterans the guys that you might think they're going to be might not see the court again the rest of the season? Because I feel like if Alan Williams returns, and even if they get Davon Reed more consistent minutes, it's really hard to find time for those veterans.
Yeah, one thing that's tough though with Dudley, I would think he'd be the logical candidate because I mean he played 9 minutes last night. I think he played 7 the game before, but he plays four most of the time, and I really don't think playing Alan Williams at the four next to another, maybe if it's Bender, I think that could work if he plays next to Bender. But he can't play next to Leonard Chandler because he's not a shooter, and those lineups don't work anymore really in the NBA. And so it is going to be tough. You don't want to say that it's Marquese Chris, but at the same time, I think there is a chance if Chris continues to struggle, he only got 7 minutes last night. There is a chance that if Williams comes in and plays well, that maybe his minutes go away.
Yeah, speaking here on Marquese Chris, before we go to our final points and then preview the quick Thunder game that's on Saturday, but what's your thoughts on Chris' performance last night? Like you mentioned, 7 minutes, but he had 5 fouls, and I think that foul trend's getting a little bit disturbing. I mean, he said he had a mental check after the All-Star break, but those problems are still really showing itself. And I heard Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons' podcast this morning. They talked about the Suns for about 5 minutes, and it seems like KOC's pretty much given up on Marquese Chris already, and so is Bill Simmons. So are you also in the same boat that you're nearly done with Marquese Chris in Phoenix?
I just can't imagine what else needs to happen for him to be more comfortable. He got every minute he could possibly want last year. Didn't really show a ton. This starter looked decent in flashes in November, December, January. Got injured, and then has just been a disaster. I mean, and it wasn't like he was an elite player in the early part of the season either. It's just two full seasons of, you know, pretty much an opportunity to develop and grow as a player. And, you know, in nearly the end of your second season, you're putting up a 7 minutes, no shots made, 2 rebounds and 5 fouls. I can't imagine what else needs to happen. So maybe it's just another team at this point. Yeah, I think you might be right.
As far as the thing that I've really noticed with Keith this year, because I've been around him full-time, just really up close this year compared to other seasons, but his basketball IQ, especially defensively on switches and on just ball watching, it's just really bad. And I know it's one of his detriments is his defensive IQ and also his overall basketball IQ. That was the thing that coming out of Washington was a red flag to some general managers. So that development seems to have stagnated or even gotten worse since he's gotten out of college. So is that the main thing that you're getting out with Chris as well, is that his IQ might not – I mean, not his basketball IQ is maybe just not the best for the Sun system?
I think so. I mean, we were talking before the game about Marvin Bagley, and just there's a lot of players like that who have those question marks, and I think most of them end up kind of learning quickly just because, you know, the thing Chris has always been that he started playing basketball really as a freshman in high school and obviously went to Washington for just 1 year and – just not necessarily the best learning environment for a basketball player to accelerate through that quickly just based on his athleticism. But like I said, two seasons, I think you do usually start to see those learning curve kind of accelerate at this point. And it clearly hasn't for Chris. I mean, he said there are flashes and we all see them, but, you know, by your third season, I think you should be more of a contributor and less of a learning project.
Yeah, I think McDonough's kind of realized to this point that outside of Bender, I think Bender's ceiling is a little bit lower than I expected when he was first coming out of Maccabi, but the 2016 draft's not looking promising for McDonough right now. Bender's looking more like an elite role player, which isn't bad, but he really swung and missed on Marquese Chris. If this turns out how it ends for him in Phoenix, which would be a really disappointing sign for him. But really, what's your final take as far as last night's game goes? Because I feel like I'm the Josh Jackson stan out of all the Phoenix media, so I'm definitely going to go with my guy Josh Jackson having his career game and have with 2 blocks, 2 steals. He looked like a two-way monster at some points last night, so that would be my big takeaway is Josh Jackson finally seemingly turning and accepting that he's the second guy on this team. So what was your big takeaway?
I would actually say I'll go with Devin Booker just to kind of change it up a little bit. I think these kinds of nights where scorers stay persistent and lead the team, score in the fourth quarter and lead the team to a win are just as important as the huge, you know, obviously 70, but even like his 46 in Philly or the night he had against the Pelicans, where he kind of just kept his fire, even against the Trailblazers. Like he has them all the time, but I think I'm more impressed a lot of the time when players can stay persistent, get out of a cold streak and lead the team to a victory. And so I think that's just going to be really important for Booker down the road is these kinds of nights and growing and learning from those. And so I hope that we get to see those lessons come through for him. And it was just impressive to watch.
Yeah, after seeing Booker score 34 last night, I was really surprised to see that this was his first time in his career. He's had 3 straight games of 30 points or more. With how good of a scorer he is, that really threw me off. But I imagine we'll be seeing a lot more of those in the future. Maybe he might even extend that streak against OKC, which we'll get into right now, that quick preview. Last time the Suns played the Thunder, it was their best surprising win of the season. Bender, Jackson, and Chris, and Booker all had great games at the same time. Actually, Chris got hurt in that game. So Bender, Warren, Jackson, and Booker all had great games, those four of them. And it really made everyone think the timeline was kind of accelerating forward. But as we all know, after that game, it kind of went downhill again. They lost 17 out of 19 straight. But what was your thoughts? What's your thoughts looking forward to this game? Because I feel like the Thunder are not going to be pissed off about that last result, but I think it's going to be fun to see this new and improved Josh Jackson going to Paul George again.
I agree. I think that's going to be a fun matchup. I think there's a lot of matchups is how I was going to look at it too. I mean, the Thunder are an incredible defensive team, especially on the wing. They have a lot of guys that they'll be able to throw at Booker, George to Josh Eustis to, you know, even Terrence Ferguson is an interesting guy with his length. And so I think it'll just be tough, and obviously Steven Adams is a handful to deal with. Had 9 offensive rebounds last night in their overtime victory over the Mavericks. And if Tyson Chandler's not healthy, that's going to fall on Alex Len and Dragan Bender to try to match up with one of the most aggressive guys in the entire league. So I'm hoping for a surprise like we saw the last time. I think that'll probably require some health from the Suns' perspective, whether it's Chandler or Warren or both, to have just the full armada of guys to throw at this really talented Thunder team. But I am excited to watch it. I think that just the up-tempo athletic style benefits the Suns in a way that some matchups don't.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I feel like when they are running and gunning, they are at their best. And I think I wanted to ask you before I ended today's podcast was the question about Josh Jackson and should he continue to start? And I posed that on the Bright Side of the Sun Twitter account. And right now it's pretty easily that they should continue to start. But the real question is should TJ move into a six-man role now, or should he take the spot of maybe Keese or Bender at the four, maybe move Bender to the five? So I guess I'll ask you, because Triano will have to decide in the next 24 hours, I imagine. Do you think Josh Jackson stays in the starting lineup the rest of the way, or at least for the OKC game? And how do you think he changes the lineup about that?
Actually, I think, well, one perspective on it might be that because Warren was out and had the injury, maybe if you're looking for a soft way to deliver that news, maybe it is because, you know, we could go with, like, well, you've been injured and we want to bring you along slowly. There's no reason to rush any injured players back, as we've seen with Tyson Chandler, when the goal maybe isn't to win every single game the rest of the year. So, you know, we'll have you come off the bench so you can play less minutes, et cetera. And the Thunder obviously do play pretty small with Carmelo Anthony at the four. Maybe there's some potential that you could play with Jackson, but we just want to see and keep the momentum of the starting unit. I think that might be a good way to handle it, but, you know, we really haven't heard anything about Warren coming off the bench. So if it does happen, I do kind of feel like it might be further toward the end of the season rather than right now. But I do think they have an opportunity to do it if they wanted to.
Yeah, totally. I think if they did want to start both TJ and Josh, it might be kind of a bad match against OKC. But like you mentioned, they do play Melo at the four. And I would love to see how them both teams just go in and attract me. That'd be really fun to watch. So they will play again on Saturday. The Suns will. They play at 7 o'clock against the OKC Thunder. So the last time those two teams played, the Suns did pull off the upset.
Oh, yeah. It's on Fridays.
Oh, it's on Friday. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. These days are all flying by all of a sudden with how the Suns are playing. Yeah, it's crazy. But we'll talk to you guys on Friday after the Thunder game.